A supercomputer company under super distress. Welcome to this audio issue of Distressed Investing, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Through total fault of its own, but still its value will rise from its origin, customizing motherboards, this firm advanced to hardware fabrication, and now to AI, in other words, building on its data center operation. Martin Fritzen Company head of sales Yi Cheyenne had a fiendishly clever, but not necessarily legal, idea. The scent of hot solder and cooling metal permeated the air in the California company's high-tech warehouse, a familiar, metallic perfume that Yi Cheyenne, also a co-founder of this energy components business, had inhaled for decades. As head of sales, Yi Cheyenne felt immense pressure. The company was struggling to keep up with the insatiable global hunger for machines loaded with NVIDIA's powerful GPUs that were powering the artificial intelligence, AI, build-out. Yi Cheyenne was a relentless closer. He knew the client base and he knew speed was everything in this boom. Every week that passed was billions of dollars lost to a competitor. The problem wasn't selling the product, it was shipping it, and doing it in a way that satisfied the labyrinthine paperwork. Especially the new, stricter U.S. export controls aimed at keeping cutting-edge AI technology away from China. Auditing had become a nightmare. Every component and every stop on its travels had to be meticulously accounted for. But Yi Cheyenne didn't have time to be meticulous. He had a $2.5 billion commitment to deliver servers packed with the most advanced NVIDIA chips, and he wasn't about to let bureaucracy stand in his way. His solution was elegantly simple and utterly criminal. It involved two sets of shipping labels. When an order was ready for a destination that would raise red flags with U.S. customs or internal auditors, say, a customer in mainland China, the server racks would first be boxed up and tagged with an intermediary destination, a trusted, benign partner country like Taiwan or Malaysia, or sometimes even a domestic U.S. address. This fake paperwork, listing a safe, compliant destination, was the set that auditors and official filing systems would see and approve. Once the compliant paperwork was filed and the boxes were safely past the initial U.S. checkpoints, the trucks carrying the servers would pull into a secondary, less scrutinized facility. There, in a flurry of activity known only to a trusted few, the trucks would be quickly unloaded, the safe labels peeled off, and the real labels, naming the actual, restricted destination client, would be affixed. The trucks would then be remanifested and shipped out, completing the sale. It was a sleight of hand all orchestrated to bypass laws Yi Cheyenne saw as inconvenient obstacles to market share. Over several quarters, this illicit method moved an estimated $2.5 billion worth of high-performance servers, satisfying huge clients and driving the company's spectacular revenue growth. Yi Cheyenne saw himself as a hero, a risk-taker securing the company's future. But the scheme was fundamentally a violation of the U.S. Export Control Reform Act, ICRA, the law that governs the sale and shipment of sensitive U.S. technology abroad, particularly to destinations deemed a national security risk. By creating fraudulent documents to disguise the true destination of the servers, Yi Cheyenne and his co-conspirators were violating federal law. They were willfully lying to U.S. authorities and effectively allowing restricted AI technology to fall into the hands of non-approved entities. For the company, the consequences of getting caught were devastating. The immediate fallout could include reputational damage. Blue-chip customers would take their business elsewhere, fearing that their own operations could be tainted by the legal troubles. Litigation. Shareholders filing class-action lawsuits would lead to financial pain. Management distraction. The CEO and other senior staff would be forced to divert significant resources and attention from running the core business to managing a high-stakes legal defense. Corporate culture. The brazenness of the scheme reinforced existing concerns about the corporate governance and control environment. Key employees would leave such a tainted firm. That's the situation with the high-tech components firm we are reporting on in this issue. Big revenue gains and big problems. There are usually three flavors of distress in a company. In most cases, a company has too much debt and weak operating results for an extended period, causing their bond and stock prices to decline. Sometimes the problem is that a company is growing too fast and it runs out of cash or borrowing capacity as it scales up. There are also times when the problems are management-related, causing the market to get nervous and shy away from both its bonds and stock. The third flavor is the case with Supermicrocomputer, NASDAQ, SMCI, a California-based technology company specializing in high-performance, energy-efficient server and storage systems, which is poised to take advantage of the boom in spending on artificial intelligence, AI. In this report, we examine Supermicrocomputer's 3.5% convertible bonds maturing March 1, 2029. When we began our research, Supermicro's 3.5% convertible bonds were trading at roughly $800 per $1,000 face value, which equated to an annual return of about 12%. The trading price has risen substantially over the last couple of weeks. These bonds are currently trading at $925, which results in an annual return of 6.5%. We view them as solid but risky, and we see a return of 9% to 10% as warranted. This would equate to a bond price of $845 to $865. Supermicro was founded in 1993 by Taiwanese engineer Charles Liang, his wife Sarah Liu, and Yi Cheyenne Wally Liao, an early hire and eventually becoming head of sales. At first, the business was centered around customizing motherboards, the nerve center of computers that enables the power, central processing units, graphics, and memory to function as one. Liang focused on engineering and strategy, Liu on operations and procurement, and Liao on international sales. From the start, the company's strategy was to create energy-efficient equipment that would reduce operating cost. The business was profitable after 6 months and grew steadily. It added product lines, computer servers, and technology used in building mobile phone systems. By the late 1990s, the company had the scale and the momentum to survive the bursting of the tech bubble in 2000 to 2002. In 2004, Supermicro, as the company calls itself in the market, introduced its first products using its proprietary cooling technology, another cost saver that remains one of its greatest competitive advantages. The company went public in 2007, selling 8 million shares at 80 cents per share, adjusted for a subsequent 10-for-1 stock split. Supermicro operates out of production facilities in the US, Taiwan, Malaysia, and the Netherlands, and competes for business almost anywhere in the world. It has the scale to take on customers such as Apple, AAPL, Amazon, AMZN, and Microsoft, MSFT. In 2021, the company expanded into producing complete AI systems and revenue increased sharply as demand skyrocketed. In 2024, Supermicro was included in the Fortune 500 list of leading companies, generating $15 billion in revenue, more than 2x its 2023 revenue of $7.12 billion. CEO Liang's controversies. The company has been embroiled in a variety of controversies that cast doubt on how CEO and co-founder Charles Liang governs operations. These issues have revolved around accounting for revenue and expenses sales in violation of U.S. export controls, accounting problems. In August 2018, the company's stock was delisted from the NASDAQ because the company was delinquent in filing its Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC-mandated financial statements. Then CFO Howard Hyshema and co-founder Wally Liao were most responsible for the underlying financial issues that caused the delay. Both men left the company. Liao was eventually rehired, and a subcontractor owned by one of Liang's brothers hired Hyshema. Management looked outside the company for its next CFO and chose Kevin Bauer, an experienced executive with a spotless reputation for integrity. Bauer brought Supermicro's filings up to date by late 2019, and in January 2020, the company's stock was relisted on NASDAQ. Shortly thereafter, CEO Liang pushed out new CFO Bauer, most likely because he was a stickler for detail at a company focused on growing as rapidly as possible. In August 2020, the SEC alleged that the company had committed widespread accounting violations by overstating revenue and understating costs in order to boost profits by roughly $200 million. The company settled with the SEC, Supermicro paid a $17.5 million fine, and Charles Liang personally paid $2 million. Before long, Wally Liao, ousted and rehired by a subcontractor, soon became a board member. Then, in late 2023, the company hired accounting and strategy firm A, formerly Ernst & Young, to audit its financial statements. In auditing Supermicro's results for the quarter that ended June 30, 2024, A raised concerns about the company's accounting and control systems and expressed doubts about the independence of the company's board of directors. On October 30, 2024, the company disclosed that A had resigned as Supermicro's auditor after less than a year. The news unnerved investors, causing the SMCI shares to fall 32% in one day, from $47.67 to $34.85. By November 6, the price had fallen to $20.87 per share. Export control problems. On March 19, 2025, the U.S. Department of Justice, DOJ, unsealed an indictment of two of the company's senior executives and a high-level independent contractor. Co-founder and SVP for International Sales Wally Liao, Taiwan Sales Manager Stephen Chang, independent contractor Willie Sun. The DOJ charged that the three individuals criminally conspired to violate the U.S. Export Control Reform Act by selling AI systems to China. The company itself was not charged. Even so, SMCI shares fell 33% to $20.53 when the indictment was announced. This equated to a $6 billion reduction in the company's market cap. In addition to the reduction in share price, the indictment has these longer-term consequences. Reputational damage is likely to lead some Supermicro customers to diversify their supplier base, to the detriment of the company and to the benefit of competitors. There are class action suits against the company by shareholders alleging that its disclosure of the risk relating to potential illegal activity was soft-pedaled. Legal and settlement costs, or judgments, could cost tens of millions of dollars. Even if the company were to win all of the cases, it will have diverted management's attention from operations to litigation. Lapses of this magnitude reflect negatively on the corporate culture and increase the fear of additional problems. The company's new auditors, BDO USA, have identified four areas of material weaknesses in internal control over financial reporting. Those four areas are: the IT systems supporting the company's financial reporting are inadequate controls for keeping track of each employee's functions were not properly designed or implemented. The systems for producing the information used to produce financial statements are not up to the task. The documentation behind the company's financial statements is insufficient. The company has pledged to remediate these weaknesses. Although the auditors did not specifically flag this detail, the company outsources parts of its manufacturing process to Abolicom Technology and Compuware Technology, two privately held companies owned by brothers of founder and CEO Charles Liang, who himself has an ownership interest. Last year, the company paid more than $600 million to these businesses, continuing to propel the business forward. Despite all of these blemishes, Supermicro has been in business for 33 years. It's now in what it considers its fourth phase of development. In this chart, 1.0 is the original motherboard business, and 2.0 represents the company's leap to manufacturing and selling equipment. The company's revenue growth was turbocharged at 3.0 when it began to build and install complete data centers. These are the facilities that house IT infrastructure, servers, data storage, networking equipment, that collectively forms the backbone of the internet. Supermicro provides computing equipment, server racks and storage devices, management software, and the networking facilities, cables, switches, security, everything that goes into constructing a data center. Because these large rooms filled with equipment run 24/7 and generate a lot of heat, heavy-duty cooling is required. Traditionally, data centers relied on air conditioning for this cooling. Supermicro developed a liquid-based coolant distribution unit, CDU, a complex system of plumbing and temperature management that costs 40% less to run compared with air cooling. This efficiency means that Supermicro's data centers are designated as green, a distinction highly valued by large corporations, which seek to be viewed as environmentally friendly. CDUs have provided a significant and durable advantage for Supermicro. Now that it's mastered level 3.0, Supermicro has entered stage 4.0. 4.0 AI is taking SMCI to the next level. Supermicro was early to identify and capitalize on the rapidly developing areas of machine learning and AI, which are turbocharging the company's growth. Scientist John McCarthy first coined the term artificial intelligence in 1956. Over the next few decades, the science community advanced the idea by developing building block concepts like computer vision and natural language processing. By 2011, the field was sufficiently advanced that IBM's Watson, an early AI system, beat television game show Jeopardy champion Ken Jennings in a one-on-one match. There are five basic parts of AI that collectively enable it to mimic human thought. Learning AI becomes more accurate by accumulating more information. Sometimes an AI system is trained with data that's labeled for it. For instance, learning to recognize numbers and letters, and sometimes it's looped back from the responses it generates. System performance is sharpened with each question and response. Reasoning AI thinks by using rules and statements programmed into it, as well as patterns it identifies from questions and responses. Problem-solving AI solves difficult challenges by breaking them down to simpler steps. For instance, it can determine the best chess move because it was programmed with the game's rules and strategy and can scan through millions of potential moves instantaneously. Perception AI can recognize sights, sounds, images, and more, typically by using sensors, cameras, and microphones, and control self-driving automobiles' language understanding. As a result of advancements in natural language processing, NLP, AI can hear, interpret, and respond to human speech. Apple's Siri and Amazon's Alexa are widely known examples of NLP growth potential for AI. According to research firm Market Data Forecast, the market for AI systems is projected to grow more than 37% per year between 2024 and 2033. The firm estimates the market in 2026 is $401 billion and will rise more than 12x to $5.1 trillion in 2033. Competitive advantages. Supermicro is well positioned to compete in the AI market. The company's data center building block solutions, DCBBS, allows its components to plug into each other in Lego-like fashion, enabling it to complete a new AI system faster than its competitors. Since no two AI systems are exactly alike, DCBBS enables the company to design, assemble, and install AI data centers built to suit each client's particular needs and purposes. This standardization of equipment increases the efficiency of assembling a system and reduces total development costs. Supermicro also has an edge because of its long-standing and close relationships with chip giants NVIDIA, NVDA, Intel, INTC, and Advanced Micro Devices, AMD, the key makers of the graphics processing chips, GPU, that lie at the heart of AI. The company has access to the most advanced GPUs, which it can incorporate into completed AI installations sooner than its competitors can. This is a selling point and a competitive advantage alongside Supermicro's cooling systems and its worldwide network of production campuses. Competition: Supermicro faces robust competition from larger companies with blue-chip finances and unblemished reputations. IBM, IBM, and Cisco System, CSCO, compete on selling equipment and have a large book of long-term customers. Dell Technologies, DELL, which competes in the market for AI servers and is known for its support services, is poised to derive the greatest benefit from Supermicro's travails, as it is well capitalized and able to provide financing to customers. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, HPE, competes against Supermicro at the high end of the server market. Supermicro is also facing increasing competition from companies like Foxconn, Quanta Computer, and Wiwynn, three businesses that started out as contract manufacturers assembling equipment according to their customers' specifications. For example, Foxconn manufactures Apple's iPhone. Now, these companies are increasingly producing their own branded servers and related technology products. Increasing competition will continue to put pressure on the company's profit margins, which means that revenue will likely grow at a much faster pace than profits. That said, even with the increased competition and damage to its reputation as a result of DOJ indictments, we believe Supermicro will be able to capitalize on growing demand for AI systems. We believe revenue will rise steadily over the next few years. Financial: Supermicro has grown since its founding in 1993 and its IPO in 2007, with the greatest part of this increase taking place since 2021. For the fiscal year that ended June 30, 2025, revenue rose 45% to $22 billion and operating profit by 3.5% to $1.3 billion. Competitive pressures intensified, while operating profit as a percentage of sales declined from 8.1% in 2024 to 5.7% in 2025. Earnings per share, EPS, which takes corporate overhead into account, fell from $1.92 to $1.68 per share. The same trend of increasing revenue and thinner profit margins continued in the first half of the current year, which will end on June 30. Revenue rose 52% and operating profit declined 9.6%. The company's profit margin declined from 9.2% to 5.4%, and EPS fell to 86 cents from $1.17 for the same period last year. Recently announced financial results on May 5, Supermicro announced strong results for the quarter that ended March 31. While revenue trailed expectations, $10.2 billion as compared with at least $12.3 billion, the company's operating profit was a pleasant surprise, $625.8 million as compared with $474.3 million last quarter and $146.8 million in the same period last year. In the current quarter, Supermicro projects revenue of $11.0 billion and $12.5 billion and EPS in the range of 53 cents to 67 cents per share. If the company achieves the midpoint of this goal, it will generate EPS for the full year of roughly $2.35 at the midpoint, and operating profit for the year, before depreciation and stock-based compensation, of roughly $2.4 billion. Balance sheet and capitalization: as of March 31, 2026, Supermicro had $8.8 billion in debt, including the 3.5% bonds that we are recommending this month. The company has 600 million shares outstanding, collectively valued at $20.1 billion at the current share price of $33.62. Adjusting for $1.3 billion in cash, the market is valuing the company at $27.6 billion. We do not assume any of this debt would be converted into stock, which is trading well below the conversion prices, which range from $55.20 to $83.44. In short, the market is valuing Supermicro at $27.6 billion, which is 3.1x the company's total debt of $8.8 billion. Alternatively, total debt adjusted for cash of $7.5 billion equates to 3.1x the expected operating profit of $2.4 billion. Either metric implies a large safety cushion for bondholders. Rapidly rising revenue is a mixed blessing, since such a situation typically requires additional working capital to hire additional employees and to finance more work in process and larger inventories. To facilitate this growth, the company raised $2.3 billion in June 2025 by issuing convertible bonds. If revenue continues to grow rapidly, the company will likely need to raise additional capital by borrowing or by issuing stock. Description of the bonds: Supermicro's 3.5% convertible bonds mature March 1, 2029, and are senior unsecured obligations of the company. As of March 31, as we mentioned before, only $3.9 billion of the company's $8.9 billion in debt is secured by various assets, so in the event of bankruptcy, after satisfying the secured debt, the company's value above $3.9 billion would then go to the $4.7 billion in convertible bonds, including this issue of 3.5% bonds. Any value left over after paying off all debt belongs to shareholders. We do not attribute any value to the bond's convertibility feature, but stranger things have happened. In regards to convertibility, on maturity day, March 1, 2029, the 3.5% bonds will receive the higher of their $1,000 face value or the value of roughly 12 shares of SMCI stock. This means that if the stock goes from its current price of $33.62 to more than $83.44 per share by March 1, 2029, bondholders will end up receiving more than $1,000. If the share price exceeds $83.44 before the bond matures on March 1, 2029, holders can convert the bond into stock. Your broker will know how to do this. Here is the Supermicro computer stock price chart going back 5 years. We note that Supermicro hit an all-time high, adjusted for a subsequent 10-to-1 split, of $101 per share in March 2024, and last traded above $83.44 in July 2024. Risks: by any standards, investing in SMCI's bonds involves considerable risk. The most significant of these are: Supermicro could experience additional governance and accounting problems. In 2024, accounting firm A resigned before issuing an audit opinion and expressed concern about the company's accounting procedures. Though current audit firm BDO USA gave the company a clean audit opinion in the most recent quarter, it expressed concern over how the company values inventory accounting issues could arise from CEO Charles Liang's ownership interests in Ableicom and CompuWare, both of which perform significant services for Supermicro and are majority owned by two of Liang's brothers. If the company fails to adapt fast enough to changing customer needs in a highly competitive industry, it could lose market share, causing revenue and profits to decline. Many of Supermicro's competitors have longer operating histories, better name recognition, and greater financial resources than it does. Supermicro relies on a limited number of suppliers for some of the materials used to manufacture its products. This concentration of suppliers exposes the company to significant risk of disruption. Supermicro's customer base is concentrated. For the year ended June 30, 2025, 54.8% of the company's sales were made to four customers. Supermicro recommendation: in normal cases, when the market values a company at more than 3.5x its debt, its bonds would trade at 2% to 3% above the yield on a treasury bond with the same maturity. In this case, that would result in something like a 5.8% to 6.8% annual yield. Given the risks involved, we believe an annual return in the range of 9% to 10% is merited. This would equate to a price range of $845 to $865 per bond, below the current price of $925. Consequently, given the recent run-up in the price of these bonds, we are placing Supermicro's 3.5% unsecured convertible bond maturing March 1, 2029, on our distressed investing watch list, and will alert subscribers when the price falls at or below $865. Action to take: watch Supermicro Computer's 3.5% convertible bond maturing March 1, 2029, CUSIP hashtag 86800UAB0, to fall below $865. Marty Fridson's market analysis: distressed bonds enjoyed their first positive month of 2026 in April. The ICE Bank of America U.S. Distressed High Yield Index returned a resounding 2.37%. That represented its best performance since May 2025, when it returned 2.51%. The distressed index's strongly positive result coincided with a negative 0.37% return on ICE Bank of America U.S. Treasury Index. That contrast underscores an important fact about distressed bonds: their price movements, unlike those of the high-quality bonds that receive far greater attention in the financial media, don't correlate closely with the rise and fall of interest rates. Instead of following the U.S. Treasury market down in April, the distressed index marched up along with stocks, which is represented by the S&P 500, posted their biggest gain in April since November 2020. Also during April, the distress ratio, the percentage of issues in the ICICI Bank of America U.S. High Yield Index yielding 10 percentage points or more above Treasuries, edged down to 5.3% from 6.0% in March. 1 year ago, on April 30, 2025, the ratio stood at 7.4%. That downward trend means opportunities for distressed investors have gotten scarcer over the last 12 months. But there's one bright note, bright for those bargain hunters with a high risk tolerance. In April 2025, 15 of the 87 companies, 17%, represented in the distressed index had at least one bond trading at $400 or lower per $1,000 face value. The number of distressed companies has now fallen to 56, but there are still 15, 27% of the total, in the deeply distressed $400 or lower price range. These issuers' severely depressed valuations signal extremely high risk of default, but that doesn't make them non-starters for the hardiest breed of distressed investors. When the price discount gets deep enough, those players actually become indifferent to whether the company remains current on its obligations or defaults. In the former case, the debtor may get through a rough patch and return to profitability, triggering a dramatic upsurge in its bond prices. In the latter case, the deep distress buyers reckon the company's asset value is sufficient to provide them a whopping gain over their purchase price when the company restructures its debt, either inside or outside of bankruptcy court. Barring an utter collapse of the economy, some of these situations may prove to be huge winners for the distressed specialists over the next 12 months. Review of current recommendations. Premium seating boosts AMC revenue. AMC Entertainment, NYSE. AMC, reported strong operating results for the quarter that ended March 31, up sharply from the same period last year and exceeded consensus expectations. Revenue for the quarter rose 22% to $1.0 billion. Operating profit was $38 million. A $96 million improvement from a loss of $58 million in the same period last year. The improvement was attributable to a relatively strong film slate and cost controls. AMC ended the quarter with $339 million in cash and expects to generate additional cash over the balance of the year. Management reiterated that demand is strong for AMC's premium theaters, which have extra-large screens, IMAX and other types, and higher quality Dolby sound. For example, premium seats sold out first for Michael, the Michael Jackson film, generating significantly higher revenue per patron, with 10% of capacity but 25% of revenue. The company is using cash flow after debt payments and maintenance capital expenditures to add more large format screens, laser projectors, and premium sound systems. In April, AMC paid off $400 million in 12.75% bonds scheduled to mature in 2027 with the proceeds of a bank loan to come due in 2031. AMC's next bond maturity is a year away, on May 15, 2027, when $125 million of 6.125% bonds come due. The company should have no problem paying off these bonds. The company raised $72 million from the sale of additional shares during the quarter. Pursuant to an existing agreement, certain debt holders will convert $155 million of bonds into stock during the current quarter. This is a mixed bag for shareholders. Additional shares dilute current shareholders. On the positive side, a stronger balance sheet means the company should be around to benefit from the industry's long-term rebound from the pandemic. We continue to recommend shares of AMC Entertainment, which we recommended in January 2025, and which currently trade at $1.52, up to a price of $4.50. Slight rise in Icon safety cushion. The value of the Icon Enterprises, NASDAQ, IEP, assets rose by $210 million in the quarter that ended March 31st. The increase largely attributable to gains in CVR Energy, partly offset by the cost of hedges on CVR's output of refined oil. Hedging against a large decline in Icon's portfolio is beneficial for bondholders, who are secured by Icon's assets. We calculate that bondholders' safety cushion, the amount the portfolio could decline before becoming worth less than Icon Enterprises' total borrowings, rose to 43% from 40% as of March 31st. We continue to recommend Icon Enterprises' 9.75% bonds, which we recommended in September, currently trading at $995 up to a price of $1,020, which would equate to an annual yield of roughly 9%. Xerox reduces overhead. Xerox Holdings, NASDAQ, XRX, reported revenue for the quarter that ended March 31st of $1.85 billion, 6% above the consensus estimate of $1.75 billion. Operating profits rose to $72 million, well above the consensus estimate of $32 million and over $22 million in the same period last year. In general, These results reflect increasing business stability and lower corporate overhead, largely due to increased interest expense. Earnings per share, EPS, was a loss of 84 cents compared with a loss of 75 cents in Q1 2025. Management reaffirmed that it expects at least $300 million in savings by the end of 2027 related to the acquisition of Lexmark, which produces laser printers and other imaging equipment. These savings will be recurring and will be in addition to the $400 million to $500 million of cost cuts remaining in its earlier Xerox Reinvented program. The market for Xerox's bonds reacted favorably to the quarterly results. The price of Xerox's 3.75% bonds that mature March 15, 2030, which we recommended in October, has risen to $300 from $260 per $1,000 of face value. We continue to recommend purchasing Xerox's bonds up to $500. Kronos sees early signs of increasing demand. Kronos Worldwide, NYSE, KRO, reported operating results for the quarter that ended March 31 that were down from the same period last year but that were better than expectations. Sales for the pigment producer came in at $499 million, down roughly 4%. EPS was a loss of 4 cents, considerably better than the consensus of a loss of 23 cents. The company's cost cuts, announced at the end of 2025, began to take effect in the quarter. Kronos is seeing early signs of improving demand and pricing for its titanium dioxide, TiO2, pigments. Pricing, which declined 6% in 2025, rose 2% in the quarter. The company believes prices will continue to rise throughout 2026. Kronos does not have any significant debt maturities until 2029. Management affirmed that the company has ample liquidity for the long term, which it defines as 5 years. We believe management is taking the right steps and that the TiO2 market is moving in the right direction. Kronos shares, which we recommended in December, are currently trading at $7.05, up 41%, above our buy up to price of $5.25 per share. We recommend holding shares. Shift4 posts strong quarterly numbers. Revenue and profits for payment processor Shift4 Payments, NYSE, 4, exceeded consensus expectations for the quarter ending March 31, despite global tensions that dampened growth in the quarter. Sales were $1.21 billion, compared with a consensus of $1.09 billion. Operating profit rose 39% to $234 million, and EPS came in at 97 cents per share, slightly above analysts' expectations. The company sees operating profit of $1.17 billion to $1.26 billion for the year, up significantly from $873 million in 2025. Shift4 estimates it will generate EPS of around $5.60, up very sharply from $1.84 in 2025. In January, we recommended Shift4 preferred and common stock, and we continue to recommend both. Common shares currently trading at $47 per share are well below our buy up to price of $70, and Shift4's 6% convertible preferred shares are trading well below our $86 buy up to price at $44. Mixed results for Houlihan Lokey. For the quarter ending March 31, investment bank Houlihan Lokey, NYSE, HLI, reported overall revenue of $636 million, down roughly 5% from the same period last year. Here are revenue number per segment. Corporate finance rose 5%, financial and valuation advisory rose 2%, financial restructuring fell 33% overall. Houlihan Lokey recorded EPS of $1.47, 17% below the $1.76 in the same period last year. The company declared a 70 cents per share quarterly cash dividend. For the year that ended March 31, revenue rose 10% to $2.6 billion, operating profit rose 5% to $527 million, and EPS rose 7% to $6.22. At $153, HLI shares, which we recommended in March 2023, remain well above our $105 buy-up to price. Big profit gains for Sabre Travel Software Business. Sabre, NASDAQ, Sabre, reported very strong operating results for the quarter that ended March 31 that exceeded both the consensus and management's own expectations. Revenue rose 8% to $760 million, while operating profit rose 21% to $169 million. Despite reduced travel in the Middle East in March, revenue increased in all of Sabre regions. The company reiterated that it expects operating profit for 2026 will be $585 million. The company projects it will use $70 million of cash during the year, principally for restructuring charges that should start to reduce operating expenses in 2027. The company ended the quarter with $665 million in cash and with $4.4 billion in debt. Sabre's debt adjusted for cash was $3.7 billion, which equates to roughly 6.3x operating profit projected to be $585 million. Management has done an excellent job rebuilding Sabre's business and profitability over the last 3 years. The company generated an operating loss of $133 million in 2022, a profit of $287 million in 2023, $498 million last year, and $536 million in 2025. In 2025, Sabre refinanced most of its debt. As a result of these transactions, the company has just $150 million in debt coming due in 2026 and $203 million in 2027, both of which should be easily managed with cash on hand. We recommended Sabre shares in November 2024, and we believe management will have time to continue building Sabre's revenue and profits, and ultimately its share price, which currently trades at $2.07, well below our buy-up to price of $4.50. We emphasize that these shares are volatile and suitable for risk-tolerant investors. Peloton continues its cost-cutting. For the quarter that ended March 31, Peloton Interactive, NASDAQ, P10, reported that revenue exceeded expectations, $631 million compared with a consensus of $618 million and $624 million in the same period last year. Gross profit from the subscription business rose 5% to $304 million, and gross profit for the connected fitness equipment business fell 22% to $23 million. Operating expenses declined 22% to $275 million, while operating profit rose 41% to $126 million from $89 million in 2025. The company tightened its estimate of operating income for the year to $470 million to $480 million from $450 million to $500 million. It expects to generate $350 million in free cash flow over the same period. Over the last 2 years, Peloton has used the cash it generated to reduce its debt to what is now a very modest level, from 6x operating income to less than 1x. The company now has roughly $1.3 billion in debt and just over $1.1 billion in cash, which nets out to $173 million, less than half of this year's operating profit. At the current share price of $5.66, the market is valuing Peloton at roughly $2.6 billion, which equates to 5.5x Peloton's projected operating profit of $475 million, an extremely low multiple for almost any company. As a reminder, we recommended shares of Peloton Interactive in June 2024 when it was trading at $3.58 per share. The stock rose sharply and on November 11, 2024, to $8.90 per share, and we recommended selling half the position. This returned the full amount invested plus a 24% profit. We recommended holding the other half to benefit from a potential sale of Peloton to a company such as Apple, AAPL, Netflix, NFLX, or Amazon, AMZN. We estimated the shares could rise to $15.32 to $18.54 in the event of a sale. Despite improving results, by March 2026, Peloton's stock price had declined to less than $4 per share. We recommended it once again with the stock at $3.71 per share. Shares are currently trading at $5.66, above our buy-up to price of $4.25. JetBlue also continues cost-cutting efforts. JetBlue Airways, NASDAQ, JBLU, reported results for the quarter that ended March 31 that were generally in line with consensus estimates. Demand for air travel was robust, and the company booked revenue of $2.2 billion, up roughly 5% from the same period in 2025. The cost per available seat mile rose 6.6%, above the company's prior expectation of 4.5%. EPS was a loss of 87 cents, below the consensus of a loss of 72 cents. These shortfalls were mostly attributable to the effects of winter weather-related flight cancellations. Given the recent increase in jet fuel prices, management suspended its forward guidance. The company had expected to break even or generate a modest operating profit in 2026. The company is making progress on its Jet Forward strategy, a cost-cutting measure and revenue booster, which is expected to increase operating profits by $800 million to $900 million from 2025 through 2027. The program achieved $305 million of these improvements in 2025 and management expects to achieve additional savings of $310 million this year. JetBlue should benefit from its Blue Sky program with United Airlines, UAL, which calls for the two airlines to honor each other's frequent flyer miles. It should also benefit from the recent closure of Spirit Airlines, which aggressively cut fares on numerous routes flown by JetBlue. In addition, We believe the current regulatory environment supports the idea of airlines combining to gain scale. We continue to believe in the possibility of a sale of JetBlue to another air carrier such as Southwest Airlines, LUV. Despite the current turbulence affecting airlines, we repeat our recommendation to buy JetBlue stock, which we recommended in March 2025, currently trading at $5.57 per share, up to $7 per share. We emphasize that JetBlue is a risky stock that has significant potential upside based on long-term improvements in operations. Hudson Pacific increases occupancy. Hudson Pacific Properties, NYSE, HPP, reported solid results for the quarter that ended March 31st, with revenue of $182 million above the consensus of $180 million, but lower than the same period last year. Management noted that the San Francisco and Seattle markets are improving, while Los Angeles remains weak. The company leased 550,000 square feet of office space, raising the company's occupancy rate as of March 31 to 77.8% from 76.3%. The company expects the average occupancy rate in 2026 to land in the range of 80% to 82%, which implies a higher occupancy rate at year-end. The occupancy rate at Hudson's three Hollywood studios, Sunset Bronson, Sunset Las Palmas, and Sunset Gower, increased to 97%. Late last year, the company made deep cuts to its administrative staff. In the most recent quarter, general and administrative expenses fell to $12.6 million from $18.5 million in the same period last year. Based on all of these factors, Hudson Pacific raised its projected funds from operations, profits for real estate companies, to a range of $1.10-$1.18 from $0.96-$1.06 per share. Hudson Pacific's 4.65% bonds maturing April 1, 2029, are currently trading at $925 per $1,000 face amount. We recommend purchasing these bonds if they trade below our buy-up to price of $890, which would equate to an expected return of 9% annually. Mercer International treads on thin ice. As expected, pulp manufacturer Mercer International, NASDAQ, Merck, reported weak operating results for the quarter that ended March 31st. Revenue in the pulp business fell 9% to $345 million from $381 million. For the solid wood business, revenue increased 8% to $132 million, compared with $123 million in the same period last year. Operating profit for the quarter was $8 million as compared with $47 million in the same period last year. The company ended the quarter with $229 million in liquidity, consisting of $84 million in cash and $145 million available to borrow. The company's results meant that the company is no longer in compliance with the provision relating to the ratio of debt to operating income under its roughly $350 million German revolving credit facility. The lenders agreed to waive any default through the end of 2026, when the company expects to return to compliance with this provision. As part of this agreement, Mercer committed to not filing for bankruptcy in 2026. We believe that Mercer's operating results will bottom out in 2026 and begin to improve in 2027. We also see potentially significant upside from a carbon capture business at Mercer's Peace River facility in Canada. The company has comfortable liquidity to carry it to that point, and as detailed in our report, it also has a variety of moves it could take if it needs additional cash. We have recommended both a Mercer bond and Mercer shares, and we continue to recommend both. Shares currently trade at $1.19, below our $2.25 buy-up to price, and the 5.125% bonds due February 1, 2029, trade at $435, below our price of $650. To see the full list of recommendations, click here. Martin Fritzen Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland. For important disclosures and disclaimers, please visit our legal disclosures page. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys, where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the best buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.